Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Merry Christmas, Julian the Jules Gill. How is he doing?
Ho, ho, ho. It's me, Jingle Jules and Scott.
Jingle Jangle Gillian.
What's your like Christmas name then?
You can give me one right now. I've never had a Christmas name.
The only thing I can think of is the fact bauble. That it's like an icy lake, or isn't it a fjord in Iceland? So you could be like a Scott Tail Fjord. So that at least gets us in the winter sort of like a spirit.
Remember everybody
as well.
Did that for a while, where it was like everyone changed their names on Twitter to like, I mean, I'm saying this not knowing if you've done this, but you know when people change their names on Twitter to like a Christmas thing? And I never do that. I did it for a little while. But you should be, sort of Jules Gill, but like Jules spelt like Jules. Like
Jingle Jules or Jules Tide Joy.
Jingle Gill. Now, if anyone listened, this will be going out on Friday before Christmas, but if anyone listened last week, I was a very ill boy. I sounded horrible. And I'm getting better. I've got a slight better voice now. But at any time, and I'm waiting for this to kick in, I can do a horrible cough and just sound like the demon's coming back again. So I'm just apologizing in advance if that happens, because I don't know when that's happening. I've been eating the Strepsils all morning. I've been drinking the coffee. I've been talking quite lightly to warm up the vocal cords. And we'll see how we go. But otherwise, it's a lovely Christmas special. It's the Untitled Planet Podcast. I'm Scott Hailford, joined by Jules Gill, and we asked people. Oh, go on.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to provide sleigh bell sounds underneath, all right? A little like, atmospheric. So you just ignore me, but just carry on with your intro, okay? So
okay, the recording might not know what to do with that, but
it's
we'll see
absolutely
how
fine.
We go.
We'll have it go. So ready?
So we did ask for people's different Christmas memories and different things they'd like us to talk about for this lovely Christmas special, but we also have... He's doing hand movements as well. He's doing little hand movements.
I can't do it. Just
do little jazz hands. But yeah, so for this Christmas special, I thought we would twin together some questions left over from last week, some new stuff that people sent us across the week, and their Christmas memories, everybody's favorite associations, gaming memories for the Christmas period. Now me and Jules will kick off, and then we'll do a couple questions, then we'll go to some Christmas stuff, and then we'll alternate for the rest of the show. So Jules, do you have a Christmas memory you'd like to start with? I've got one if you don't.
Well, I was thinking about this before we started recording, and I have a vague memory that my sister got a PlayStation 1 copy of the Beyblade game.
Okay.
And I remember spending the majority of my Christmas break after that, because it was obviously when I was still at school, because there's like an 8-year gap between us.
Uh-huh.
And I remember trying to help her through the management sim side of it. And like, I've never seen a kid's toy like so egregiously being boiled down into like a spreadsheet. Like it was a office masturbator's wet dream, man. It was just literally just constantly like, you must balance the bearings here. You must get like the spin top, the ring disc weight must be like this. And I was like, this is really complex for a kid's game.
Yeah, I never knew that William Blade was that old. I thought it was like a 2007, 2008 thing, because I don't even know I can't say it.
Bill Blade. Just call it Bill Blade.
That's how ill my brain is. This is my last day of work as well. I'm recording this on the Monday, knowing that I'm done work in 5.5 hours. But anyway, I never knew that was a thing back in before 2007, because I only encountered it when I worked in Argos. But like, still,
I don't know why that franchise hasn't made a resurgence in the video game market. Because think about it nowadays, right? You could either have it with like some sort of crazy AR technology, or even like a the motion control stuff. Mm-hmm. Like you pull the maybe you pull the Switch controller out to determine how many like the rip, as it were, on it. You could have it so that it's like complete virtual reality where you like look around the dish, or maybe you are the Beyblade and you control it like the Eagle Vision from Assassin's Creed.
Oh god, if you were the Beyblade, but it kept up with the rotations,
you're the Beyblade, and you're like, whoa!
You're gonna see how long you can stand as spinning around at like 5,000 whatever it is rotations a second.
I'd love it.
My Christmas memory is always going to be the PlayStation 2. I got the console at launch in 2000, and it wasn't that first Christmas, although that I was lucky enough to get. I actually won a competition back then from Mr. Sony, and I won a collection of games. I got FantaVision, Tekken Tag, SSX, and I think Ridge Racer or something back then.
That's quite the haul, mate.
I know, man. It was really, really cool. I entered like some magazine competition I was lucky enough to win. It then took them literally 7 months to give us anything and actually receive stuff until after Christmas. So it wasn't like anything to do with that, but it was the following Christmas, 2001, when both my sets of grandparents got me a PlayStation 2 game each. One of them got me Jack and Daxter, the other one got me Devil May Cry.
Aww,
and I loved that energy. I just sort of sat there. And remember when, I don't know if you did this when you were a kid, but for me, when it was Christmas, I always begged my parents if I could put the whatever console it was on the big TV. Can I put the Mega Drive on the big TV?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Can I put the PlayStation on the big TV?
It takes pride of place, doesn't it? Because while they want to relax into sort of like the Christmas stupor and watch, I don't know, The Great Escape for the umpteenth time, you're just there like, no, bear witness to the great technical marvel that is PS2 graphics.
Well, exactly. And it's like, so I remember putting on the big TV in the morning, and then my dad going like, well, we can't keep this on here, because I was like playing Tekken Tag or something. So I had it on there for a bit, put it upstairs, and obviously I didn't know that I was in the, I think I knew I was getting Jack and Daxter, but not Devil May Cry, whatever. Mm-hmm. They both arrived, and then I just disappeared upstairs for the rest of the afternoon.
Yep.
Which I know is the most antisocial child in the world, but also being a gamer.
Every single kid does that, I swear down. Like, as soon as they get a new game, it's like, well, I guess you'll be bringing my meals to my room then. See you later. Bye.
I look forward to my platter being delivered to outside my door.
Make sure that it's wafer-thin ham and cheese just pressed under the door.
Press it so you can get it under the door. But I just played a lovely combo of Jack and Daxter and Devil May Cry with Linkin Park's Hybrid Theory on my hi-fi.
Come on.
So just 2001 AF all up in here for me. So I thought we'd pass over to some questions, then we'll go back to Christmas stuff. So question from McAllister NYC. Hey lads, happy holidays. Is there a great Christmas game? Also, if Die Hard is a Christmas movie, does that make Die Hard for the NES the best Christmas game? Have an awesome holiday season, and thanks for being great this past year. Now, Die Hard on the NES is pales in comparison to Die Hard on the PlayStation 1. So
Die Hard Trilogy.
I don't know what Mr. McAllister's doing. Yeah, exactly.
Die Hard Trilogy is the best one.
Does that make that the best Christmas game, though?
Well, it depends on what you look for in terms of like the best Christmas thing, because I know that there are other games that have been set around Christmas, but I will definitely say, hand on heart, that Die Hard 2... Die Harder, where it was the light gun game portion of the trilogy. That was amazing.
Yes.
Like, I could still walk through the airport scene in my mind.
Oh, God, like, same
beat
actually,
for
yeah.
beat, and then, like, I know exactly where to shoot the guys to make sure that I got the machine gun ammo and the stuff like that. Like my brain has been hardwired for that moment.
Die Hard Trilogy, Time Crisis, and Point Blank were, like, the trilogy when I had my G-Con 45. Which I don't know if they just stopped selling them because it was literally a gun-shaped peripheral in your house for children, but it was a fun time before we cared.
They did that because of the obvious reasons, but also maybe because we started moving towards like LCD and like Retina displays, work on that. There is a workaround to get it, though.
Yeah. There was that gun, I'm sure they sold like just an actual literal handgun-looking gun that came with one of the Time Crises, and it was just like modelled on an actual handgun. It was like a Beretta or something. As a kid, I was like, that's really cool. And then never been able to get it because it literally looks like a firearm. But like at the same time, when I was young, it looked really cool. But the whole Die Hard thing, I don't buy that that's a Christmas movie. I'm that guy. So I don't know where you are on that debate anyway.
Because of the fact that it says it is and it's set on. It literally is set. They're going there for the Christmas party at the Nakayama Plaza. They're going in Die Hard 2. They are he's literally bringing the present, the Christmas gift.
Just because
it's not set on Christmas Day doesn't mean that it's a Christmas film.
Escape,
the Christmas film.
Well, is Arkham Origins a Christmas game? It's set at Christmas. No, it's not. Like, it's set at Christmas, but thematically, it's not got anything to do with Christmas.
Do you beat up people while there's Christmas decorations around? Yes, you do.
Yeah, but that doesn't make timeline placement.
There's a giant.
Not,
There's a giant Christmas tree.
But it doesn't. I don't know. This is clearly a conversation that will stretch into the rest of time. But I don't think that it papers over thematics. I think there's something thematically should be about Christmas or giving or gifts or something. I would disagree with McAllister NYC. Although if you're supporting the Die Hard thing, then the Die Hard game, yes. I haven't played the NES one, but the PlayStation trilogy. Man. Was a stellar time.
The NES one, it falls down quite literally in the fact that you have like a foot stamina meter, because when you walk over glass, you can like actually like kill yourself because it's
obviously doesn't.
It's a great thing in concept, but it was from the NES era where it's just kind of like nothing is explained. You just learn by dying.
Just 2D and barely there, but your mind's like filling it all in.
Yeah.
Okay, so some Christmas stuff. First up from Paul Flanagan Photography. Massive shout out to Flanny, who actually photographed my wedding. Dude is in phenomenal photography.
Legend.
Go check out Paul Flanagan Photography. Genuinely incredible. Not sponsored by him, but just love him anyway. Mm-hmm. He says, going to Toys R Us on Boxing Day with my Christmas money to purchase Donkey Kong Country Diddy's Kong Quest.
Oh.
Only to be told it was sold out. Was about to leave when a member of staff chased me down to let me know a delivery had just arrived. An unbelievable feeling. Joe says PlayStation 1 and getting Porsche Challenge, Crash Bandicoot, and the classic onside soccer. And Greg says getting my PlayStation 1 with Rival Schools for Christmas in 1998.
Rival Schools is such a fun game, man. I'm so gutted that they didn't do anything with that franchise. Like, they pulled a few characters and moved them across to the main Tekken thing, but like in Street Fighter, but it was just like, nah.
I remember it looking gorgeous, and I remember seeing it be played, but I never actually played it myself. I know people talk about it, and I knew that was going to be a big deal when I mentioned it, but I've never actually really played Rival Schools, which I know is like a heretical thing to announce on a podcast.
What I loved about it was the fact that it came with like a pseudo RPG single player element. So it meant that you were like building relationships and stuff that would help out your team battle dynamics. So it means that they would do like their bar would build quicker, or they'd be able to do slightly more damage. And it would be like choosing your relationships through school and then just going into the fights of them, which were actual fights. It was like, you know how refreshing Dodgeball Academia was with the fact that it's like it's a battle system that you want and yearn to play more of. Mm-hmm. It was like that, and I was like, yes.
That's cool. Plus, the animation style as well is like gorgeous. I remember that being the thing that like really stood out. Last Christmas thing for right now is Rex Wolfley saying, Christmas of 1988, I got my first console, the NES. Played it nonstop that entire day. Went into the living room the next morning and found my mum playing Mario. She'd gotten up at 4 a.m. so she could have a tin. Spent the rest of the morning playing two players. Such good memories. That's brilliant. That's really
lovely.
Heartwarming. That's lush. We had a question from Rex Wolfley as well, who says, who do you think in the gaming realm needs to be visited by the three ghosts to change their greedy ways? Loving the UBP, being with you since the start.
Oh, thank you so much for your support.
Thank you,
friend.
Genuinely, that's awesome.
To answer your question, I would say that Peter Molyneux needs the gift of ghosting. He needs to have the past that you'd be like, remember back when like Bullfrog and was like a thing. Remember when you like did some stuff that was actually decent. Remember when you just stopped talking out your ass. And then present should just be like the ghost walks in and goes, Peter, and just shrugs. Peter, what are you doing? Cubes, Peter, what are you doing? And then the ghost of the Christmas future will just be an NFT of the ghost of the Christmas future from the Muppets Christmas Carol. Just saying, this is you. This is what you're going to become.
The thing is, like, for a man who made Black and White, it's become very black and white as to what you're not supposed to be doing. Good. Lol.
There's a reason you're a writer, mate.
It's the populist opinion. I don't know, but like, still, he's like approaching this stuff where it was like, let's just go full bore into like charging a whole lot of money. And I know that the NFT side of his latest game, we talked about it last week. Mm-hmm. I forgot the name of the thing he's making, but he's making that thing.
Project Real Estate.
He's making that little thing, and you know, he's made all this money, but it doesn't mean anything yet. It's only going to mean something when the actual game kicks off. And I saw someone sharing a report this morning saying that if you're tracking the Ubisoft side of things and their Quartz thing, that's not had anywhere near as many sales as Ubisoft clearly thought it would. There's 2,298 separate NFTs that they've minted that haven't sold, and there's only like 15 users or something, but it's only generated about $300. So it's just sort of that all the
literally speak
users,
with your wallets.
Yeah, the 15 users are just passing the $300 between them over and over again. Everybody else is just going, I'm all right, to be honest.
Yeah,
and that's not really working. So yeah, that stuff's kind of all over the place. For me, it would just be a general greed thing. I think I would just go to Ubisoft in general. Ubisoft Pass, just remind them of when they made video games. Here's Assassin's Creed. Here's Rayman Legends. Ubisoft Present, just cancel Ubisoft Quartz. Maybe a manifestation of Quartz can just appear in front of them and just be like, please kill me. And then maybe the future can be, I don't know, some glorious return for Ubisoft Art, that the Ubi Art project.
You know Valiant what it would
Hearts
be?
2, give me that.
Nah, you know what it would be? It would be pitch black and out in the middle of the, you could see nothing, little fog creeping around your feet. And all you hear is the sound of those three lights lighting up. And Sam Fisher steps forward and goes, "Hello, Scott. It's been a while."
It's a trailer just for me. He just does the little squee noise. Yep. And it's just for me. Like I've said before, I have zero faith in that project. But I would love the Ghost of Christmas Future to be like, here's the Chaos Theory sequel that we have promised you. Because right now, I know it's a remake, actually. But if they channel all the elements from the later Splinter Cell games, maybe they can remake the original in a way that feels like something like a combination of Chaos Theory, Conviction, Blacklist, whatever. I'm slowly bunging up from the amount I'm talking about this. That's just my body slowly betraying me. But next question is Jacob Sawyer, who says, what's your go-to Christmas film? Mine is The Lord of the Rings.
Ooh, I like the way he's put this on there. Big bless to you, my friend. The Lord of the Rings films, as we have stated many times over, and Scott can attesting as his wedding was indeed Lord of the Rings themed, they are impeccable movies that stand the test of time. And while it's a bit wispy towards the end with the ghost army just arriving and just everything else just still stands up to this day.
A bit wispy.
But I'd say that for me, I go for the classics. And by the classics, I mean Muppet's Christmas Carol is my all-time favorite Christmas film ever. Because no matter what mood I'm in, I will put it on and I'll just be like, guys, we're all just watching this for an hour and a half. This is it. This is us now.
I think for me, and it's definitely a victim of the amount of marketing Disney put behind twinning Star Wars with Christmas. But, you know, across, say you go all the way back to 2014, 2015, and obviously Force Awakens, there was that whole thing where every year it was Star Wars at Christmas time. And so I started revisiting in the years prior to that, I started revisiting Star Wars at Christmas because it was like done with work, sit down, get a beer, put on New Hope, put on Empire, and go through the old Star Wars. Anyway, over time, they changed that because they wanted to release more movies. So all of a sudden, they started releasing stuff during the year, and that little time window went away. But there is something about sitting down and just watching Star Wars at Christmas that I do really love. But it has to be the old ones. I'll stretch to the prequels, but not the new trilogy. That it's not even films, to be honest. I don't know what they are. I guess Last Jedi is, but the first and last one are barely films. But I just go with Star Wars stuff, even though it is very much corporately mandated. But God damn it, it works. I like fast food. I like Star Wars at Christmas.
Well, you'll be so pleased to hear then that the 4K 60 frames per second Christmas special, Star Wars The Holiday Special, is now online for you download and enjoy. Yeah, some people have up-resed it, done it. So I'm going to set you a challenge over this Christmas period.
I already turned that down, that challenge.
I would like you to watch that and report back to us in the new year.
I will see just how much free time I have. I'm curious on that thing.
You just managed to complete the Halo Infinite campaign. You've got free time.
Just because I'm 85 hours into Halo doesn't mean that I've got free time. That's I'm doing that for the good of the people. I need to report back that the Halo campaign is actually pretty terrible, but it's fine. It's a thing. But in terms of some more Christmas memory stuff, Scott Dogg says, one of my main gaming memories was when I was a kid. My original PlayStation broke on Christmas Eve and I was devastated. However, Christmas Day arrived and my grandma had bought a PlayStation 1 and the day was saved. Can't decide if it was a Christmas miracle or just sabotage. Regardless, Merry Christmas. Next one down is Andy Taylor getting an Xbox 360 and playing Oblivion, escaping the dungeons at the start and seeing that huge open world to explore always sticks with me. Everyone have a great Christmas and stay safe. And Steve says, I remember opening up a Game Boy Advance SP bundle of The Legend of Zelda The Minish Cap on Christmas.
Oh, nice.
That is a stellar combination. It's probably
that's
one of my most...
worth quite a mint, actually, isn't it?
Like, I think so these days. I mean, I paid like 100 English... Well, I paid like $100 to get a copy of The Minish Cap.
Crazy.
From a collector. It's probably one of my most prized possessions. What's a gaming Christmas thing you've opened that you treasure dearly?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There's one thing that I actually, when Ben and Peter used to work here, they gave me a copy of, it was a Batman Tiger Electronics game. And the reason that it meant so much to me is because that was the same game that I was given by my gran, like back in like the early 90s, when I went to go visit her, like in the home. She was like, I know you like video games, so here you go, like play on this.
No way,
and at the time, it wasn't like the best video game, obviously, and it wasn't you can't even qualify as a video game. It was just a game toy thing. But it was the thought that I told them that, and then they got me that. I was like, that's still like, I've still got that. And I like hold on to that very, very deeply.
No, like two genuinely lovely dudes. I remember when Ben gave me a statue of Sam Fisher for Blacklist one time, because we were over at his house and I was like, that's such a cool statue. And then it came around, so I think it was actually my birthday, not Christmas, but he was like, and now it's yours. And I was like, really? Like, that's just a lovely, lovely man. In terms of Christmas stuff, I think most of my like sort of core Christmas memories are definitely associated with older consoles. Mm-hmm. So I don't really have something that I still have, because sadly I've retired everything. My PlayStation 2 is somewhere in this house. I just have no idea where anymore. I did want to point out, I did want to apologize to Vin Van Meel. He submitted a couple questions last week. One about what was your most underwhelming 2021 game, and also asking us about NFTs. And then we just ran away with the NFT stuff and we never got back to
it. Yeah, sorry, mate. Thing.
So it's not that NFTs don't suck, but I thought we should talk about, what did you have anything that stands out as underwhelming from this year in terms of... I'll just say that I really think Deathloop misses the mark. I was quite glad to see Skillup do his review on it recently, where he just sort of got out there. And I think he's like the only other person who's saying this at all. Like, obviously, like most of the critical response has been 10 out of 10, 5-star. It's brilliant. It's one of the games of the year. And I've just been sat there, and you can check all the old podcasts that we did. You know, check those things out where I'm like, is it? Is it really? Or is it just bells and whistles the game where nothing really happens? And then his video is like, here's every single thing wrong with it. And I'm just like, yes, let me sit down and just go, it's here, it's that. What's that? That's the thing, that.
My one would be Dungeons and Dragons Dark Alliance, because I was up for that. they obviously I was super hyped for the game, like, because anything Dungeons and Dragons, and the fact that it was like squad based, it was kind of like get together with a group of friends, just smash the ever loving piss out of any goblin that crosses your path. Big up for that. But when I was invited to do the hands on preview stuff, went there, played it. It was fine, and I said off, this was like a 6 or 7 out of 10 game. It was just fine. But then when I got to see all of the stuff added that was part of the main gameplay loop, like the constant need to grind for resources to get to upgrade your equipment, the fact that everything looked shoddy, the fact that it just kept on glitching and stuff like that, I didn't see those things in the hand-on preview. So when I came to actually playing with like Mikey Lawson and Beanie, we all got together and we were like, yeah, this is fun, but it's also really not fun. Like, it's
like a
one
really
of those
fine 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's just one of those games where you could always say this, can't you? It's fun with friends. But at the same time, that could be said for a lot of things.
So like, being homeless.
I'm pretty sure that like kicking someone to death is probably more fun with friends. it's not a statement that should be used. Yeah, Merry Christmas to everyone. It's not something that should be used as a qualifier to excuse a video game, should it? I'm just saying, like, people put it to the weirdest things, don't they? It's kind you know, dipping your hand in lava is more fun with friends.
Yeah,
like,
literally,
of course it is, because it's a
shared
experience.
Like, yeah, I had a massive, I love the original Dark Alliance so much. Like, they remastered that thing around about the same time that this one came out. So I bought that. I was like, this is incredible. And the new one is just nothing like that. It has nowhere near the same amount of charm. It has nowhere the same amount of text-driven stuff or character-driven stuff. And it doesn't have the same cool little water effects that were mind-blowing back then too. And so they're only really similar in name only. And I think that they're kind of trading off that to just do, like you said, it's one of those games. It's a four-person loot-driven arena combat shooter thing or melee-based thing. And you feel like you've seen all of it in about 20 minutes, and
yeah, exactly.
You kind of have, really. So yeah, it's a bit of a letdown. And the other side of that coin, though, is a question from Travis Webb, who says, "I'm curious to know what your favorite gaming moment has been this year. Not best game necessarily, but best gaming moment. Maybe a specific scene, surprise announcement, hidden gem, or mechanic."
Hands down, it's from the opening of Psychonauts 2. It's loading it up. It's going back to pick up familiar characters in new settings, and it's just the moment that I saw Raz. The moment that I saw how lovingly recreated his like old outfit was, and when you get given your new stuff, I was just like, this is everything that I want from a game. This is my Christmas moment, effectively, because it feels like a present that is unwrapping itself. I had such a blast with that game, but just to be able to, the moment that you're given control of him and you move around and you jump and you feel exactly the same weight and sort of like, I just was like, this is a good game. I can just tell from the obvious it's a good game.
Yeah, I'm like glad that it exists as well. Like, that was my thing, like opening it up. I still haven't finished Psychonauts 2. I think I'm going to go back to it and try and do it as one of my Christmas games.
Please do, please.
But I got pretty far through it. Oh, I think I did pretty far through it. But yeah, the art style, the world, like you said, the movement. Like, I like that they tighten up the controls a bit and they give you more abilities at the start. But like, there's something about Tim Schafer on firing on all cylinders that's so good. Mine would just be Metroid Dread. Like, I've been looking forward to a side-scrolling Metroid on a home console for like forever, like
long
decades.
Time.
About as long as I've been on this planet. And so like the 3DS one's great, like Samus Returns is awesome, but I wanted something that was like take full advantage of the Switch hardware. And I love that they just, you know, took a Metroid, added God of War boss battles to it, gave you really, really fun, cool abilities that you can chain together and just do all that. But the thing that I love the most and the first time I just went, yeah, this is incredible, is every time that you kill one of the bosses, you get a really cool like boss kill animation, like a cutscene. And the first time you fight that guy that looks like a big scorpion, the creature who's like jabbing at you. The way that they shoot that scene, like cinematically, the way that they frame Samus, and she's just like waiting for the kill, like sort of stalking this thing, and they're both circling each other. That thing charges at her. She jumps through the loop in its tail as it coils around.
So satisfying, isn't it?
After shooting it, it falls into the wall on the other side of the room, and she just stands there like, yep, I'm back. Like,
yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's been a long time, but I'm very much so fully formed. Like, let me take on the Doom Slayer. Like, it's just so good. So that would be one of mine. Next question from Pinky, who says, what's your favorite veggie/vegan Christmas food? Nothing with nuts for me, unfortunately, but I am partial to a corn roast. Also, Merry Christmas, you filthy animals. I hope your festive season is as delightful as you are. So I think you should take this. Vegan food recommendations.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animals.
I
am making this year a vegan Wellington. So it's going to be like mushrooms and celery and...
that whaley in my belly.
Lots of like veg that goes in there, and it's all just going to be fried up, wrapped over with pastry, and it's going to be very, very nice indeed. You're going to serve that with the classic roasty potatoes. Obviously going to have some Yorkshires in there if we can find the vegan versions of them. It's going to have lashings of gravy, tons and tons of sprouts covered in butter, and maybe some of the vegan lardons that we can find there, because bacon and Brussels sprouts is a match made in heaven. And just like loads of honey, or in this case, agave syrup covered parsnips and carrots. That's what we're going for.
That sounds absolutely stellar. We had a bunch of people over to the house the other day, and we got, because I tell you what, lots of different supermarkets there, Christmas party food, there's a lot of vegan alternatives to those things now.
Yeah.
And you can get vegan, like big pigs in blankets, essentially, and lots of like different, you know, vegan truffles and stuff like that. So we had lots of little platters, little pastries. So yeah, I would definitely just shout out them as well. I love this time of the year for the amount of pigs in blankets that are just everywhere. Yeah. Greg's has got them in. They're in every little corner street thing. Just everywhere. I want to eat nothing but.
Let's give a shout out as well to the unsung hero of any roast / Christmas dinner. Stuffing.
Yes.
Stuffing is king, man.
Gluing the world together. It goes with literally everything. So Christmas memory stuff. Nathan Paxton, who says, for me, my most memorable gift was getting GTA Vice City as a gift 1 year. I will never forget how badly I wanted that game and my sheer joy of opening it and exploring Vice City for the first time. V-Rock is still the best GTA station ever. Happy holidays. Milton Browse says, Snowball Sunday was an indie demo I got free with a magazine on the Commodore 64. It was stick men having a snowball fight.
Amazing.
Me and my brother played it every Christmas Eve for years after the C64 had become a historic relic. It was simplistic brilliance. Nate also says, the ultimate troll in Christmas past, when internet wasn't as good as it is now, would be waiting for weeks for a game that you wanted for Christmas, putting it on Christmas morning, only to see that there was an update needed and the estimated time yeah. was 145 hours. Now, I mentioned this, or I included this, because that's something that I think we can all kind of relate to. But yep. I remember when I got my Xbox One, which I got in like 2015 or 2016 or something. I didn't get it at launch. But I got that on Christmas morning, and my mum got me it because she was like, I got it for this job. I was like, oh, I'm going to try and keep up more with like new Xbox stuff. And I got it, and we got it hooked up. I was at my parents' house, and they have terrible internet. They have like 5 megabyte internet or something. And I had the exact same thing where we plugged it all in, and my mum was like, and I got you Project Cars. And I was like, thanks, mum. That's something I would never have bought, but cheers. And I put that in, and the Xbox needed an update. The actual console itself needed an update, and the game did. So it queued everything up, and it was, I think it was 80 hours.
80 hours?
So we just left it on, and we went off to sort of do the rounds and see the other family members, and we got back, and it was down to like 78 hours or something. And it eventually completed later that night. I think there must have been a... Because it was off, we eventually turned it off and it downloaded stuff faster. And I managed to play it one race in Project Cars on Christmas Amazing. Night, but it took all day. Next question from William Start III, who says, Happy Holidays, legend. Sometimes old consoles are rare and expensive, or the games just aren't around anymore. If you could play any game from any console right now, what would it be? What's your gut say?
What, is it any that I don't own?
I guess just anything. If you were going to jump through a time portal and just play any game from any console across your entire life, what would you go back and play?
I'd probably go back and play just a random game that I remember having a lot of fun with. I'd go back and play either SmackDown 2.
Ciao.
Or I would go and play the Pandemonium games.
I never played Pandemonium.
They are really fun games. 2D, well, 2.5D, if you want to get technical about it. They are really, really fun, weird as hell platformers that are just so 90s, over-the-top craziness. It's mad.
I feel like for the, when you mentioned SmackDown as well, I think that me and you, we romanticize or we love that original like wrestling period in the 2000s because the games were right next to the product on screen and it was just stellar. And I think that, for me, the thing I would go back to is Def Jam Fight for New York because I can't get it anywhere.
That. Yeah, you
like,
love
I
that
love
game.
Def Jam. I had a big old rap phase, give me all the Ice Cube albums, and I was loving Def Jam Fight for New York, and you just can't get it anywhere. It's not emulated. The PSP version doesn't work on the Vita as far as I know, and it's just, it's one of those things where I just can't access it, so I would go back and play the Def Jam games. Okay, so for our last question, comes from Edward Shirazhans, who says, good day, legends. Which franchise do you expect to make a comeback in 2022? I'm going out on a limb and saying the Night Trap franchise, except you're saving dudes. Thanks, gents.
It's actually pretty decent, actually. Yeah, I'll be up for players, but that'd be quite fun. it's hard to pick a franchise that needs to come back that we haven't already discussed at length. We know that there's Time Splitters in the works now, so that's good. We know that there is... Oh, I tell you what, the Tenchu franchise could do with a return. Ooh. Like, that would be very good to see that.
I would
because
take a lovely Tenchu.
Like, do you know what? I was thinking about the other day. You know, I was like bagging on Splinter Cell for like if it came back with an open world thing that had all of this and it wouldn't be fun. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, take all of that and shove that opinion in the bin because I'm going to suggest exactly that for Tenchu. Because imagine an open world Tenchu in feudal Japan
with a wingsuit.
Yeah, well, you've just got to like assassinate people, like, and you're given like with like different diplomats or people of like power in the area. They hire you to help destabilize it. If they set it against the backdrop of like trying to the unification of Japan with like Nobunaga and all of the other warlords at the time, and you were doing missions to help win them the battle from within, that would be an exceptional
if
game.
If they did like a sort of live reacting thing where you sort of, you can zoom out on the map and look at it where like all of a sudden you're seeing dividing
see
lines
how you're
and regions.
Affecting.
Yeah, and in real time you're like, well, I'm going to go over here and kill this guy, which I know will destabilize this area, which I know will ruin the meeting that was planned later in the day for this guy. And then do it that way. And I wonder how much that would clash with Warner Brothers owning the Nemesis system.
Well, I was going to say, get it done by the devs who get it done by Warner Brothers, who would have the production value, and we'd have the Nemesis system, and you would have this thing where, like, constant rivalries, you could use diplomacy to get you into their court to try and, like, scout out the castles and stuff, and then go back there at night, like, when it's, like, stealth your way through, kill all the guards, kill, like, Ieyasu Tokugawa, and then just be like, get out of here!
I would love that. I'd love an open, like, said, like an open world style thing with like actual like reactive world map and reactive planning and stuff would be awesome. I just kind of hope for like a Legacy of Kain. I think that most stuff that we need these days is already back. I really want a new push for new IP. But if there's something that I think would just be cool to have, it's the sort of regal Shakespearean tone of Legacy of Kain with a more modern sort of combat system. There's no chance in hell it's coming back. But I would love a Legacy of Kain. I can but hope. But yes, massive thank you to everybody for sending in all their different questions, all their different Christmas memories. And we wish you all the most merriest of Christmases and also for the new year. We'll be back, I think, on whatever week it is, January the 7th or something?
7th, something like that, I think, yeah.
So we'll check back in then. But also Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Jules Gill.
And a Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Scott Telford. But before we go, do not worry, people. We have the art assets. The cups or mugs are being made. So in the new year, you'll be able to drink all of your festive base spirits and also just regular vodka straight out of a can in either a Jules or Scott mug or a both of us mug for the added harmony of the UBP. The UBP.
Massive thank you to everybody for listening to us across the year. And we'll catch you in 2022. Bye-bye.
Big love.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.